Hey there, it's Zach, and for today's mini-episode, I would like to share with you the audio reading of my latest essay that's over on Substack, titled, Is It Too Late to De-Inshittify Our Humanity? If you enjoyed this essay, and you don't want to miss my future essays, actionable insights, and the occasional soapbox rant about navigating the next act of both work and life on our terms, not the robots, make sure to subscribe at zacharnold.com/substack. That is Zach, Z-A-C-K, zacharnold.com/substack. And now without further ado, here is my 100% human reading of today's Substack essay. As a Xennial raised before Wi-Fi, I can still recall the distinct whirring and clicking sound when spinning the finger wheel of a rotary phone. Hence, I still marvel at the magic of being on a Zoom call with a team member in Buenos Aires, sending them a document via chat, and watching them respond to that message in real time. But just because technology still feels like a magic trick to me does not make me a Luddite. In my previous essay, The Inshittification of Everything Everywhere All at Once, I was not arguing that we should time travel back to the early 1900s and revert to washing our clothes down by the river. I was arguing that the progression of modern technology is no longer progress, but it is instead the inshittification of just about every aspect of our digital and physical lives. There is a distinction between shunning technology wholesale and living like the Amish versus stating that modern technology is getting worse, not better. By the way, side note, having spent a good deal of time working closely with Amish communities, which is another essay for another day, I can confidently say that it is the Amish that have it figured out. We are the ones who are fucking nuts. As an old man tired of yelling at the clouds, yes, my knee-jerk reaction is to throw my hands up to a rapidly inshittifying world and escape to a cabin on Walden Pond. One, I'm pretty sure my family would appreciate keeping their Wi-Fi, and two, making the easy choices will only lead to a harder life. In the pursuit of building a more meaningful life, it is the struggle that gives us purpose. Anything worthwhile must be earned. No self-respecting human with the goal of becoming stronger would outsource lifting the heavyweights to their personal trainer. Nor should we outsource the most meaningful parts of the human experience, connecting, learning, and creating, to the algorithms. With the right rules, boundaries, and guardrails in place, I do believe in a future where a healthy relationship with artificial intelligence is possible. As a digital essentialist, not to be confused with a digital minimalist, I have no problem embracing the most modernist of modern technologies. But a healthy relationship with AI is only likely if we are very intentional about how we use and don't use the robots as our servants, not our masters. Which begs the bigger question, is it too late to de-inshittify our humanity? I believe that the best hope for the future of our humanity lies at the very slim intersection of the following two Venn diagrams. And if you're listening, if you were to look at the article, I have a Venn diagram here with two circles. On the left is the diagram, the best of the robots, and on the right is the best of the humans. And there's a very slim intersection of these two Venn diagrams. Today, I'll be exploring this intersection in the following three realms: de-inshittifying how we connect, de-inshittifying how we learn, and de-inshittifying how we create. The heavy lifting necessary to de-inshittify each of these areas, let's be honest, this could fill three entire books. But having said that, here's a surface level overview of how we became so inshittified in the first place and what we can still do about it. One, de-inshittifying how we connect. Xennials raised without Wi-Fi are the last generation to have learned during our formative years how to make friends, build relationships, and become useful members of teams and communities IRL in real life. We didn't have the luxury of hiding behind our keyboards and swiping left or right until we found the perfect person, lurking in forums, Discords, and Facebook groups before we announced ourselves with the perfect comment or post, cyberstalking potential colleagues, collaborators, or even our potential bosses on LinkedIn or Glassdoor to find the perfect job. We just had to show up in person, or at the very least in somebody else's inbox, and start conversations like humans. And some of them were awkward. And some of them were amazing, and a lot were meh. And this is how we built our work and our lives, 100% organic and algorithm-free. When social media first came along, it was a genuinely useful tool for us, the end user, to expand our social and professional networks. Whether Facebook, LinkedIn, or Match.com, we could create a basic profile of our interests, our hobbies, our work, and our lives. And with basic search parameters, we could find people similar to us based on where we went to school, where we worked, what we watched or listened to, and what we enjoyed doing in the real world. You checked in for, 15 to 30 minutes a day, scanned the day's newsfeed, commented on a few photos, liked a few posts, and then you signed off and you went on with your analog life. Most people either don't remember or they literally never knew that there was a time when you could filter your Facebook feed by customized lists. For example, you could create a family list so you only saw posts from your family members. In LinkedIn, they didn't have a newsfeed to remind you on a swipe-by-swipe basis how inferior you really are to your peers. In places like Match.com, where, by the way, full disclosure, I met my wife, well, that forced you to actually read about someone, often without pictures, I know the horror, in a swipe-free environment. And then the fucking algorithms and shitified everything. Now we are more hyper-connected than at any point in human history, with hundreds or even thousands of friends, connections, and followers. And hey, if we are DTF, side note, I literally just learned what this stands for. Yeah, there are now apps and robots for that too. Yet despite an endless selection of tools to help us more efficiently connect with each other, we feel more disconnected than ever. Loneliness has become a global epidemic that's affecting over 15% of the world's population, literally causing upwards of 100 deaths per hour, more than 871,000 deaths annually. So, the solution is to use the same technology that created this problem in the first place? Having your bots more efficiently compose and auto-schedule your posts and your notes, write your generic comments and other people's generic posts, or auto-compose and send your DMs so that somebody else's bots can write AI slop to respond to your AI slop? Really? Using AI to fast-track relationship building is not how we dig ourselves out of this existential hole. The algorithms are the shovels. I have no problem using chatbots or AI agents to do the preliminary research necessary to find the right people to connect with, source all of their social profiles, find their contact info, or even put together a dossier to better understand who they are, what they do, and why they do it. But you still need to read their books and their articles, or watch their movies and TV shows, or listen to their podcast interviews, or scan their social posts and look at their photos. This is the heavy lifting that demonstrates you have actually done your homework. This is also where there is space for your intuition to make human judgments about whether or not you think this is a person worthy of connecting with. And most importantly, you cannot outsource drafting your outreach, your DMs, or your comments to the bots. People do not respond to your words because of what you say nearly as much as how you make them feel. The fastest path to connecting with other humans, it's a lot simpler than you think. Make them feel seen. This is the type of connection that only we, the humans, are capable of. 2, de-inshittifying how we learn. Zennials raised without Wi-Fi are the last generation to have learned how to learn without the internet. We Googled our information from Encyclopedia Britannica and the Dewey Decimal System. Our ChatGPT, well, that was our parents, our community, and our teachers. And Bob Vila was our YouTube. We had extremely limited access to the collective information of all mankind. Therefore, useful information held real value. And then we did the heavy lifting to not only acquire that useful information, but then also apply it in the analog world. When the internet first entered our classrooms and living rooms, well, we simply had easier and faster access to a hell of a lot more information. But we still had to make the conscious choice to search for relevant information based on the problems we needed to solve. Then with the transition from Web 1.0 to 2.0 came our opportunity to not only access more useful information, but also contribute to this exponentially expanding archive of human knowledge ourselves. And we could do this via forums, blogs, personal websites, social channels, and rudimentary how-to videos during the early days of YouTube, when it was still primarily videos of cats spinning on ceiling fans. And then the fucking algorithms inshittified everything. Google became the global leader in online search because they built the best online search tool in the world. But now, Google search results are an endless ocean of AI slop and irrelevant paid promotions. It is a documented fact that you can read all about in Cory Doctorow's book, Inshittification. that Google knowingly and deliberately made their search engine worse so that you have to spend more time searching such that you can be fed more advertisements. Because when you're the only legit game in town or frankly on the planet, maximizing shareholder value is the end game, not customer satisfaction. Online learning, it's no better than searching. YouTube, which I'm sure you already know, is also owned by Google. Well, they will do everything that they can to prevent you from taking action away from their platform. A simple search that might begin with how to X will lead you down an algorithmically curated education porn rabbit hole where you can spend hours upon hours passively watching other people do things that you would like to be able to do someday, only to passively spend even more of your time discovering new channels so you can continue to watch strangers mentally masturbate. And because we've become so obsessed with hacking and optimizing every aspect of our work and our lives, the only way to keep up with this endless stream of quote-unquote knowledge is learning at 4x playback speed. Our screens and our earbuds have become an endless fire hose of infotainment, filling every crevice of silence and boredom during our days, such that we never allow ourselves the space to process, because there is always more to consume, always more to download, and always another information nugget to save later. And if we don't keep up, well, then we're always going to be behind and we will never be enough. Not to sound like a broken record here, but once again, we're using the same technology that created this problem to solve it. Really? Really? There isn't enough time to watch all of your watch later YouTube videos. So just have ChatGPT summarize the transcripts. Don't have time to listen to all of your saved podcast episodes, attend all of your endless Zoom meetings, or read all of those free PDFs that you've downloaded but never taken action on? Well, just have the bot summarize. Yep, I'm going to admit it. I was the Poindexter in high school that the jocks and the cool kids would beat senselessly and steal. Never mind. I was the Poindexter in high school that the jocks and the cool kids would politely take the notes from so they didn't have to take their own notes or even study. But what the prom king didn't realize is that the notes were all but useless to him. And by the way, his grades versus mine proved it. It was the process of taking the notes that allowed my brain to make the necessary neural connections to internalize the information such that I could apply it in real life. Moreover, there is a limit to the speed at which the human brain can learn, and no amount of algorithmic summarization will ever change that. If you're bypassing the heavy lifting of processing information by outsourcing learning comprehension, summarization, and pattern recognition to your robot overlords, well, then you're no better than Captain Handsome, who got a solid C- by cheating off my chemistry notes, but still thinks that sodium is a dangerous chemical because he doesn't know how to spell it. In the digital world where all the collective knowledge of mankind is free and available to everyone, knowledge no longer holds any value. The value lies in turning knowledge into wisdom, something the robots cannot do for us in the analog world. 3, de-inshittifying how we create. When it comes to outsourcing creativity to the algorithms, my sage zennial upbringing no longer holds relevance because everyone with the intellectual capacity to have made it to this point in the essay remembers life before the chatbots when we had to think and create for ourselves. We all remember a time when we could recall phone numbers from memory. We all remember a time when we could drive from point A to point B without requiring navigation to guide us turn by turn. And God forbid we have to sit with the uncertainty of not having an exact ETA. Oh, the horror. But now, short of my wife and kids, I couldn't tell you the cell numbers of the most important people in my life. And it now takes me an average of 5 times to remember the route to a new place in my own city without needing help from Google Maps. Why? Because I've happily outsourced this portion of my memory to the iPhone overlords so that I have more space in my brain to think rather than remember. What I'm not willing to outsource, however, is my ability to generate novel ideas and create new things in the world. My fear of the robots and shitifying how we connect and how we learn pales in comparison to the sheer terror I have of outsourcing the creative process to the algorithms. In a recent study out of Wharton, and by the way, not to be confused with that other recent ChatGPT study from MIT, researchers found that when participants were tasked with completing creative tasks, the use of ChatGPT, well, it improved the quality of their individual ideas. However, it also led to the generation of similar ideas lacking originality and diversity. To quote, The ideas are great, but not as diverse as human-generated ideas. That points to a trade-off to be aware of. If you rely on ChatGPT as your only creative advisor, you'll soon run out of ideas because they are too similar to each other. I am terrified that the use of chatbots and generative AI will not only atrophy our ability to create new things from scratch, but even worse, that it will make it so easy for everyone to create adequately mediocre content that all of our, read the bot's ideas, will sound, look, and feel exactly the same. As Steve Jobs has said many times, creativity is just connecting things. So if creativity is simply about connecting things, and those things will now be created by and iterated on exponentially by the bots, well, doesn't it stand to reason that the actual creative process could cease to exist? I don't need an extensive body of peer-reviewed research from the world's leading scientists to convince me the content that we consume across all channels of the internet, both short and long form, is already becoming homogenized and enshittified at scale. While I value the following prognostication from many experts, quote unquote, that 90% of the content on the internet will be AI-generated by 2026, with about the same relevance as a groundhog's shadow prognosticating another 6 weeks of winter, I do actually fear that we are blindly outsourcing our unique ability to connect ideas and make sense of the world to the algorithms at the expense of our creative souls. At its core, artificial intelligence, AI, is merely algorithmic imitation. If the first generation of AI slop that we're seeing is already this bad, just imagine what fifth generation AI slop will look like once the bots have had a few years to iterate on themselves at speeds that we cannot even comprehend. No different than my relationship with my smartphone, I am now very intentionally creating rules, boundaries, and guardrails around how I do and do not use AI to create. I'm all for using the robots to reduce time spent on non-creative, repetitive, and menial tasks that sap time and energy from the actual creative process. The bots can do my deep research for me all day long, provided that the information sources are clearly cited, legitimate, and not hallucinated. I'm also a big proponent for using AI chatbots to help provide an objective point of view to counter my arguments, help me recognize blind spots in my thinking, and point out things that I don't know that I don't know, of which, by the way, there are a lot. Where I draw a hard line is outsourcing the heavy creative lifting to the algorithms. I will not ask the robots to generate ideas from scratch until I have forced myself to come up with the bad ideas first so that it can then help me iterate on my ideas to make them better. I will not ask the robots to write words for me from scratch. I will only request feedback on the words that I have already written first. I would rather publish shitty human words than in shittified AI slop that sounds like everybody else's slop. Most importantly, I do not use chatbots to help me overcome writer's block, because making the effort to confront why I have writer's block, it's where the majority of my self-discovery, my awareness, and my creative inspiration has come from. If we avoid the difficult work of facing and processing our human fears, well, then we lose the well of inspiration that makes our words, our stories, and our feelings uniquely human. I don't believe that it is too late to de-enshittify what is rapidly becoming enshittified, but we are no doubt crossing the Rubicon into the point of no return. If done right, there is an incredibly bright, prosperous, and highly creative future ahead in that very slim overlap between what makes the bots great and what makes us, the humans, great. De-enshittifying how we connect, how we learn, and how we create as humans requires us to prioritize effectiveness before efficiency, quality before quantity, and doing things right before doing them fast. And yes, even when things are hard, when they're uncomfortable, or we are stuck. This is the only sustainable path to building genuine human relationships, turning knowledge into wisdom, and ensuring that our stories continue to be our stories. To prevent the further enshittification of our humanity, we have two choices. Choice one, make things easier, more convenient, and more comfortable, but also more enshittified. Or choice two, make things harder, more inconvenient, and more uncomfortable, but also more human. Easy and enshittified, or hard and human. The choice is ours. Hey, if you enjoyed today's essay, please head on over to Substack. Let's chat. I would love to know, what is one change that you can make today to reduce your reliance on the robots? I look forward to seeing you there in the Substack comments. I hope that you subscribe, and I hope to hear from you soon. Take care and be well.